Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Duluth Rundown, a podcast focused on the local Twin Ports running scene. My name is Tony Stensland with Tony Stensland Coaching.
And I am Mike Ward with Duluth Timing and Events.
All right, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. Episode number 21 of the Duluth Rundown podcast. We have no sponsors. We have no official people to thank other than you guys. You guys who listen to our podcast kind of really help keep us going, even though we enjoy it and probably do it with no listeners. It's really nice to know that people are out there listening. So thank you guys for sort of being our unofficial sponsors.
I think what's provided me the most joy, well, I guess it is fun putting on a podcast, you know, it's kind of a lot of time and work sometimes, but first of all, talking to people, like our interview subjects is great, but nothing provides me more joy, I think, than being out and about and talking to someone and say, Mike, I listen to your podcast, I like it a lot.
Yeah.
Like, all right, cool. It makes it all worth it, you know.
Do you remember, this is kind of like, I don't know why I was thinking about this, but you remember blogs?
Oh, yeah.
You still have a blog. That's right. You have a blog. So I was thinking about blogs the other, because I had one years ago.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, blogs now all of a sudden feel kind of old school because it seems like everybody's got a podcast now.
Yeah, right.
But there are still a lot of blogs out there. I just remember, like, I used to do one, must have been 10 years ago. I had one for a little while. I didn't keep up with it very much. But yeah, podcasts are kind of like the new blogs.
Right. Well, it's just kind of, I think we talk about stuff that we think is cool and to be reinforced that it is actually cool and worth listening to.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, good. All right, we'll keep going.
And Mike, your blog is actually far beyond what I would call a standard blog. Yours is like a website.
I think
it's far more interesting than what mine was. Mine was another WordPress blog kind of deal, just like everybody else's. So it was kind of dull, and it's more interesting. Only it's basically a diary, you know.
Right.
But yours is way better. Your website.
Appreciate that.
So let's talk about episode 21. We've got quite a bit to talk about, including a really cool interview with Amy Broadmoor. For those of you who know Amy from the running and triathlon and gravel biking scene, but also as a documenter of races, both in photography and then with a project that she's started called Onward. She'll talk about that later on in the podcast, so stay tuned for that, because that's a really cool conversation with Amy and some of the stuff that she's got going with her endeavors. Typical rundown section, other than, of course, this time of the year right now, we don't have races, so we don't have the race reports, we don't have upcoming races, but we'll do some of our traditional stuff. And Mike, tell them something that's exciting happening right now during our broadcast.
Well, right now.
Right now.
Michael Coppy is going for, is this where you're going for?
Well, I was actually going for like where we are as we record.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Well, we're outside. We're in person.
We're in person. Yeah.
We're in person. We're outside. And it's really, really nice.
Yeah.
It really is. You know, we kind of piecemealed a few episodes together with using Skype. And, sound quality is not great. You can't really get a personal feel. And maybe that's more on the production end of just having a conversation with someone. But it is really nice to be in person. Granted, we're approximately 6 feet apart. Right?
Yeah, we're more or less following the social distancing rules. Plus, we're outside, so that's kind of nice. That's even better. I'm sure a lot of you listeners kind of noticed the sound quality and just kind of the whole dynamic. When you're doing everybody knows by now, you know, Zoom and Skype and FaceTime and all that, the conversation doesn't quite flow well. The computer voice, that little delay, it's all a little funky. And then just being able to, like, look people in the eyes and have a conversation is so much better. So now we're able to do that. Hopefully we can continue to do that for our next few podcasts and things will get back to normal.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Cool. Nothing to report on races, so I'll just jump right into the trails report. Trails are, by and large, open, but I know last time it rained a decent amount, and the city did a blanket closure for the whole city for, you know, the morning into the afternoon. I know it rained today already. I guess I haven't checked, but I think people, and we kind of harken this every time, just kind of be, you know, cognizant of trail conditions. You know, if you're leaving a footprint or if you're leaving a bike print, it might be a little wet for the trails. I kind of use that quarter inch guideline. You don't have to bring a ruler out there, but you know, if it's approximately a quarter inch of an imprint, whether it be your foot or your dog or your bike, you know, it might be smart to let the trails dry off a little bit. That being said, it's been such a dry spring so far that, and now that the foliage is up and, you know, the trails are green, the leaves are out, I think that, you know, the soil really soaks up a lot of water really quick, and I think the trails can take a little rain with no issue. But, you know, if we're talking a 2-inch rain, 3-inch rain, torrential downpour, again, you know, check all the local trails reports page, such as COGS, City of Duluth, Superior Hiking Trail. Otherwise than that, get out there. Mosquitoes are maybe coming out a little bit. I've had many ticks on me this year so far, but it's all worth it. It's so fun to get out.
So we should mention we're recording on June 1st, and I was just checking the COGS Hartley Twitter update, and they updated it an hour ago, so that would have been about 2 o'clock p.m. In the afternoon, and it says, trails remain open, not enough rain to close things down. So we had that brief shower that went through a handful of hours ago, but The trails, I was actually on the Hartley trails this morning, and they were perfect then, and so yeah, that little rain didn't affect them at all. So I'm sure everything else in town is open as well.
In fact, I've heard some maybe complaints, especially more on the mountain biking side of things, of like the DT and COGS trails are too dry.
I knew you were gonna say that.
And it's like almost like rubble or sand, or I guess I don't know how to describe it, but yeah. Almost like you're slipping out, and you want a little bit of that moisture for a tacky surface.
Yeah.
So it's a fine balance for, I think, you know, the air quotes, you know, perfect trail conditions. And you know, just keep in mind kind of the guidelines, and you'll be good.
Yeah, I think that I'm not an expert on trail building, but I think that is something that they take into consideration is, you know, that when we do get a shower, they can be open right away, if not still, because they're able to drain so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And potentially if you get a trail section that gets a lot of sun exposure, that's going to dry out super fast and get a little bit, You know, slick at times from the dustiness and everything. But I think that's the better problem to have than too wet. So
yeah. Well, I think now is just a great time to get out on the trails this time of year where, you know, the ticks are maybe still out in force, but the bugs aren't, you know, absolutely horrendous yet.
And, right.
It's just so fun. I feel like every day it's just more full green.
Yeah.
It's fun to be out on the trails.
Exactly. That's what I've noticed as well. And it's been cool. We haven't had a lot of heat just yet. Right. So it's been a relatively cool spring and early summer. So that's been nice, and hopefully, I'm sure everybody, all of our listeners have been out there and enjoying it, just like you and I have as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's the trails report. I know you have a lot to talk about, Tony, today, so let's get going with the Coach's Corner.
Oh, yeah, Coach's Corner. So this is just something that I kind of thought might come in handy for people if they're looking to train a little bit during this time of no races, and you've got a long time to kind of work and, I don't know, improve your speed, improve your fitness, build your base, that kind of a thing. And if you're someone who maybe writes your own plan, or you don't really do a plan as much, but you want some sort of guidance, I have three simple words to keep in mind when you are trying to either write your own training plan or just have some sort of structure to this whole, to all your running. Three words: frequency, duration, and intensity. Those are the three things that you have to pay attention to when you're training, say in a given week. So frequency, we'll talk about all three of those. So frequency being, how many times a week do I run? One time a week, 5 times a week, 7 times a week, 10 times a week if you do doubles. Frequency, you know, that's pretty obvious. It's just, how many times do you run? The duration, that's also pretty obvious. It's either the time or the distance that you run. Most of us, we kind of measure our runs in mileage, so distance tends to be the one, and mileage tends to be the ones that we use for distance. But we always, you know, we talk about our weekly mileage. Is it 30 miles a week? Is it 50 miles a week? Is it 70 miles a week? What is it? But duration is something that you need to pay attention to. And the third one is intensity. And that gets a little bit trickier because there's a lot of ways to factor intensity. The obvious one is speed. You know, how fast do I run? How slow do I run? The faster I run, that's more intense. But sometimes the surface that you run on is intensity as well. A technical trail, even at a slow speed, is still going to be a relatively intense run versus a non-technical trail at, say, maybe a not, you know, a slightly faster speed. So just to throw out some numbers, like if you're doing, I don't know, 7 minute miles on the Superior Hiking Trail, that's moving, that's intense. Yeah. You know, up the shore, still trail, and you could do 5 miles of that, but you could do 5 miles of trail, say like at Bagley, at 6 minute pace or something, intense speed wise, but not intense surface wise. But intensity is something that you have to pay attention to as well. And my rule of thumb is you really rarely increase all three of those at the same time. So in a given week, don't necessarily increase your frequency, increase your duration, and increase your intensity. Maybe just two, maybe probably just one is the safer bet. And if you, like this year, we've got more time to train because there's fewer races. There's no reason to try to rush into things. You've got time, so take things slow and maybe just focus on increasing your frequency and keeping your duration and your intensity relatively the same, but instead of running 4 days a week, run five, and then try to build up to six. And then as you can handle that frequency, then maybe you increase the duration, so you increase the distance, and that then your weekly mileage is going to go up into as well. And then you look at maybe backing off duration, but increasing intensity. Keep the frequency up, back off the duration, increase the intensity. You can play around with it all. There's no hard and fast rules, but to me, those three things are something to always keep in mind, always keep in the back of your mind of when you're trying to draw up your own plan or just some sort of structure to what you're going to do for a week or a month or the entire summer.
Nice. Yeah, I like that idea of kind of focusing on one. Mm-hmm. Follow-up question, what scenarios would someone focus more on intensity, focus more on frequency, or focus more on duration?
That's a really good question. Like I mentioned, at this time of the year with not a lot of races, I feel like a conservative approach is the wiser approach. So I like to focus a little bit more on frequency now. So I'm actually, personally, I'm running 7 days a week, but I'm probably, like last week, I think I had 10 runs. I think I doubled three times. Hmm. And that's working out really well. I'm not running hard. I'm keeping all the efforts the exact same, and all the efforts are easy. Hmm. So I'm mildly increasing the duration or the distance, but not very often. Mm-hmm. So, you know, roughly last week I ran 50 miles for the week. So, you know, divided, you know, by seven, you know, you're looking at about 7 miles a day. Mm-hmm. Sometimes broken up into two runs and sometimes just one run. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of what I'm doing. And I've just been doing that for the handful of weeks. Eventually, I'll increase the duration a little bit. And I think intensity, if you've got a race in the relatively near future, and depending on what kind of a race it is as well, an ultra marathon, you maybe don't have to worry about intensity in terms of speed, but maybe intensity in terms of trail. Mm-hmm. But if you have a 5K, then maybe intensity in terms of speed. You need to certainly ramp that up and get the body use. And if you are increasing that intensity, and again, you know, maybe you decrease the duration or the frequency then, so you can give your body a little more time to rest. Hmm. And even if you're going on a conservative approach, decreasing those three is important too. You know, once a week, 1 week per month, maybe you just kind of dial everything back, frequency, duration, and intensity. Hmm. And I just refer to those as recovery week. In fact, when I'm writing out plans, I capitalize recovery week. Hmm. Because I think that's that week is dedicated to recovery. That's an important mm-hmm. week. So everything gets dialed back for that.
Yeah. May was my recovery week.
Yeah. Yeah. March was my recovery week.
Yeah. I got to get back into a training program because I want to give a good showing for the virtual grandma's event, mm-hmm. which I still have some time. Luckily, if it was still the normal date, I think I'd be highly unprepared. But I know I got a little bit of extra time. So.
Well, you know, and Mike, you're number one, you're a good athlete, so you're going to pop into it really fast, your experience will help a ton. So, you know, you're in a good position having done so much of this stuff in the past. So, no problems. You'll be back at it quicker than you think.
I've toyed with some training programs in the past, say 1 or 2 years, where it's focused more on, and I think I rely on just, like, I've been running for a long time. My body can handle aggressive increases to some extent, but instead of, like, a 3-month build, it's like a 3-week build, you know, and just, like, to do that, you have to be at a pretty high baseline, you know, for, say, 3 months to start.
Yeah.
But then, you know, to run 40 miles a week for 2 months, and then the last month, go 40, 50, 60, 70, 80. And I first thought that was a good plan, and now I'm going back to steady over 3 months. And so, it, again, just goes back into increasing, you know, the duration.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just how fast do you do that, and I don't know. But then I see I back myself into these corners where, like, I have to do this virtual grandma's by July 31st, so I only have 4 weeks to try and ramp up. So,
yeah. You know, I think we've probably talked about it here on the podcast before, or at least I've mentioned it. It's the old George Sheehan quote, you know, we're all an experiment of one.
Yeah.
It's kind of how it often works, you know.
Right.
Just keep trying new things. We had our podcast earlier with Jaro and Harry Cottrell, you know, talking about different training ideas, and Harry was really fast in his day, relatively low mileage for marathoners. Jaro, really fast in his day, higher mileage. Mm-hmm. Both worked, you know.
Right.
They both work, and it's kind of fun to just experiment a little bit on yourself and see what works for you.
But they wouldn't have, their training programs wouldn't have worked for each other, right?
Probably not. Probably
it's
not.
Kind of what they,
I guess it's an unknown, but yeah, probably right. not. It's clearly, those two work, you know, each respective training plan worked for them, so.
Right, right.
Yeah, so there just aren't a lot of dead-on correct answers.
Yeah.
Which I find fascinating.
Exactly.
Myself.
Yeah.
But I think if you look at some commonalities of it all, and I think the frequency, duration, intensity, I think most would agree with that.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. At least some kind of building blocks to create that plan.
You start with something simple, and then you work to more complex, but the simple is going to be pretty much universal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Do you want to hop into gear review? I know you have some new gear to talk about, Tony. I'm really excited to hear.
Well, I do have a gear review, but it's not new gear, actually. But I'm super excited to talk about this. I think it was on our last podcast when I talked about the beauty of running in cotton shirts, right?
Yeah.
I think it was. And so in keeping with that kind of old school theme, I've got another old school gear review to do. And it came to my mind because after that podcast, the next couple 3 weeks or so, the weather was pretty cold.
Yeah.
It was pretty chilly spring. It was a little bit damp. And I was still wearing those cheap knit gloves.
Oh, yeah.
That's my gear review. The beauty of those cheap knit gloves.
Uh-huh.
That might be the best running product I've ever purchased.
Yeah.
You know?
Now that I can get behind.
Yeah.
I was skeptical of the cotton shirt. But actually, since then, I went running in a cotton shirt. I was like, it is kind of nice, you know?
Yeah. Well, good, good. I'm glad you at least tried it. I've actually done all of my runs in cotton since then.
I
think maybe two have been in. Well, one was in merino wool, and one was in synthetic when we had that hot Wednesday a couple weeks ago.
Just to justify that your point is correct.
Yeah, totally. This morning, long sleeve cotton shirt through Hartley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, huh.
But the cheap knit, they're like, what, $3 for $5 at Target or something like that. You buy one or two packs and you are set for at least, you know, the rest of the fall, winter, spring. And that's if you lose a couple pair here or there. Those things are just the best. I remember races used to give, that's what you used to get. Instead of t-shirts, you get like those cheap knit gloves.
Huh.
My 1999 LaSalle Banks Chicago Marathon gloves that I had those things for years and years. I don't know what happened to them. They've since been gone. But those were great gloves.
Yeah, well, we got to bring that back if races are.
Yes. So gloves. Race directors, yourself included, if you're out there listening, think about cheap knit gloves as a race handout. Plus, you don't have to worry about sizes.
Oh yeah,
part. That's kind of nice.
Maybe or there's small, only like large.
Two sizes. You know, small, medium, large, extra large, and that's about it. And so that's kind of nice.
Yeah, that's a great gear review, Tony. And I, what I do is, because usually, you know, with the cheap ones, it's kind of like cheap sunglasses. Like, you break them easily, you lose them easily, but you don't care.
Right.
Versus, like, the $250 pair of sunglasses where if you lose it or break it, you're, you know, distressed, highly distressed. So same with the cheapo gloves, like they get holes in them by the end of the year. I lose one, whatever. So I always get a new pair, you know, every fall when it, my hands start getting cold. And I like to go down to the Army Surplus store because they have these poly liner gloves.
Yeah.
And that's what they're called, the poly liner gloves.
Yeah.
And I really like them because they're useful for, you know, maybe 2, 3, 4 months where it's kind of in between. You know, you can maybe wear shorts and a long sleeve and gloves or kind of just that in between. But then also I really like to layer those with just a slightly heavier glove in the deep winter.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure runners have dealt with this where it's like 0 degrees, negative degrees, you're going for a run. Well, your hands are going to get freezing, so you need the big gloves. But then your hands heat up so much in these huge gloves, so you're constantly taking them out, and then they freeze instantly, and they're cold. But you don't want to put them back in the muggy. And so I think, you know, layering with those cheap poly gloves is a really good strategy for sub-zero running in the really cold, too. So super versatile.
Yep, for sure. In fact, I was so inspired when I had this thought about these cheap knit gloves, Mike, that I composed a poem for the cheap knit gloves. So I have a poem, and I have to say I really kind of stole this from John Keats, big poet Keats. And so this is kind of a knockoff on Ode to a Nightingale by John Keats. This is Ode to Cheap Knit Gloves by Tony Stenslin. So I'm going to read you the poem that I composed for these cheap knit gloves. My legs ache and a drowsy numbness stands. My sense, as through the miles I have run, is of warmth emanating from my hands. 5 miles past and homewards I am done. 'Tis not through envy of my knitted gloves, but being too happy with my cozy fingers, that me, light-footed Mercury of the road, doing that which I love. Among beeches green, a freedom lingers. Running in spring, I sing a full-throated ode. Thank you. It's our first attempt at poetry on the Duluth Rundown.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so I apologies to John Keats. I totally stole that from the first stanza of his poem. But the cheap knit glove, you can't beat that.
Wow. It's good enough to write a poem about.
Yeah, exactly.
Very cool. Yeah. moving on, besides poetry, what are you into lately, Tony?
Oh, so actually, I'm excited about this too, and I think you might actually be excited about this, Mike. What I'm into lately is speed golf. Have you heard of this?
No, but I can envision what it is.
It's exactly what you think. It's golfing and running combined.
Huh.
Do you remember when we had Nick on and we talked about hunting and running, and you asked him if it was something that you could do, that you could do both? Chase after the pheasant or something? That's exactly what speed golf is. You hit the ball and then you run to it. And then you hit it and then you run. And so you try to complete the round as quickly and efficiently as you can.
Yeah.
And so what you do is you tally up your score. So if you're playing 9 holes and you shoot a 40, and it takes you 30 minutes and 30 seconds, you just combine 40 with 30-30, so your speed golf score is 70-30.
Right.
That's your speed golf. And that's it. And it's as simple as that. And you can carry as many clubs as you want. 7 might actually be the limit, but you wouldn't want to carry that much more, to be honest with you, because of the weight.
It's the weight.
You can carry 1, but most people don't. Kind of 3 to 6 or so is kind of that standard range, what people do. So I've been studying that a lot. In fact, there's a pretty big tournament in Rosemont.
No way.
In fact, it's the longest running speed golf tournament in the U.S.
Wait, this is not just an invention of you. This is a real thing.
This is a real thing.
What?
There's a world championship speed golf.
What?
So it's fascinating.
Wow.
And, Nick Willis, the New Zealand miler, who's a 2-time Olympic medalist, he's partaken in the world championships before.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a legit kind of... You want to talk about niche sports.
Oh, man, gosh.
Speed golf.
Yeah.
It was actually first established by the great American miler, Steve Scott, who just went out one day with a 3-iron and played a round of golf as fast as he could. And it just has grown into like this huge... like there's like a league.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there are tournaments all over the world.
That I learned something new today.
I know. It's fascinating. So if they have the tournament, it's called the Bob and Brock. If they have that tournament in September, I'm going to try to go down and play in that tournament.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
So you've been practicing.
I have been.
For the tournament. just in general?
I have been, because Anger Park, you know, or not Anger, but Lester Park Golf Course has been closed. And for the longest time, people would just go there. I've been running there. I've ran there about 20 times.
Yeah.
This summer. But they're mowing the fairways. They're mowing the greens.
Wow. Huh.
They don't have the holes in the greens. There's no pins or anything,
right,
but you can kind of just shoot at the green.
Right.
But when I was out there running, I saw people, oh, they're just out there hitting a ball around with bringing a club or two, and just, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that looks fun. I can go do that.
Yeah.
And so then I was like, wait, there's this idea of speed golf. So then I researched that a little bit more.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, okay. So I'll get a workout in, I'll bring some clubs. And so, yeah, so it's like a little interval workout. You hit the ball and then you run. And it's so funny. If you've golfed before and you know you hit the ball, you stand there, you look at it, you just slowly put your club back in the bag.
Yeah, drink a beer.
Maybe you hop in the cart, maybe you just walk, but it's very pastoral.
Yeah.
It takes your time. Not speed golf. You hit it and you don't even watch it. You kind of see where it's going to go. You grab your clubs and you take off. And you hope you see it as you're running. It's a lot of fun, actually. And it's just,
wow,
it's hilarious to play golf and run while doing it. It's so fun.
Well, that's interesting you mentioned that, because when I've played golf, and I'm really terrible, so this is why, I feel like half the time of the whole golf outing, I'm looking for my ball,
yeah,
you know, like frustrated. And so, you know, that I think that would be kind of nerve-wracking if, like, I'm making good time, and then, you know, slice it way into the woods. I mean, that's really going to knock your time down.
That's exactly right. And it is nerve-wracking having to kind of look for your ball when you know, like, time is of the essence.
Right.
You're wasting time.
Right.
In fact, the best way to sort of score well or compete well in speed golf is to be a better golfer. Because it's a lot easier to shave a stroke than to shave an entire minute.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
right,
like, for instance, Nick Willis, when he competed in the World Championships, and again, this is an Olympic medalist as a miler, you're not going to get any faster than him.
Yeah.
I think one year he finished, like, 13th.
Hmm.
One year maybe 15th or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, clearly the fastest guy in the field on that speed golf tournament, you know, not even top 10.
Yeah.
So the golf skill is more important than the running speed, for sure.
It's like Tiger Woods, new sport.
Tiger Woods probably would have been pretty good because he, early in his career, was a pretty good runner. He ran a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yep.
So I kind of think of biathlon with this, where it's kind of the endurance sport mixed with the focus sport, or whatever you call it.
Totally.
You
know? It's like summertime duathlon in a way.
Because
you do, you run relatively hard, especially on your drive, and your drive is, you know, for me, it's not very far.
Yeah.
But, you know, a couple hundred meters, we'll just say, you know, 200 meter. I wouldn't call it an all-out sprint,
mm-hmm.
but you're running pretty hard. So then your heart rate is really up there as you're trying to hit your second shot.
Yeah,
And that's really hard. You have to kind of calm yourself down, just like the shooters in biathlon, you know.
Yeah,
it's not
quite
to their intense level,
yeah,
but it's similar, yeah.
Wow. Huh. So what's the world? Is it a world champion, or is this, say the name again of it, the Brow?
The tournament in the cities is called the Bobenbrock.
Bobenbrock?
Bobenbrock. B-O-B and Brock. I don't know what it stands for. I think it's probably two guys.
Yeah, Bobenbrock.
Bobenbrock tournament down in Rosemont.
So that's a tournament in Minnesota.
Yeah.
But then there's also a world championship.
But there's also a world championships.
Wow.
It's big in the West Coast, Oregon area.
Hmm.
It's also very big in England.
Yeah.
I think they had a world championship in Japan one year. But,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so September is supposedly, hopefully, when that tournament's going to take place.
Speed golf is
speed golf.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is very interesting.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I wonder how many out there listening are as bamboozled as I am right now that this is actually a thing.
I actually hope that people are like, oh, I want to try that. Because honestly, I really like golf. But every time I'm out there, I'm like, man, I wish I was running on this golf course right now, because this is great.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so to have Lester Park available to go run on now, because they've closed it for golf, has been really nice. It's a great training ground. It's nice and soft. I find it just really enjoyable to go out and run there. But then when you couple it with the golf, which I really enjoy golf, it's just a super fun little sport.
Well, my request, Tony, is that you score yourself on the Lester course.
Oh, I have.
Yeah,
yeah,
and publish your score and see you can beat it. I mean,
oh, there you go. Okay.
Races are canceled. This is a fun thing to get people out and about and kind of that competitive spirit. And I mean, now I want to try. Like, I want to try and beat your score.
So I have to say, my score will be kind of a little bit of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, for a couple of reasons. Number one, the main reason is that they don't have any holes in the green.
Oh, I see what you mean.
It's like they filled them in, you know. So
right,
what I do on my approach shot, which is the shot like to get up to the green. I just aim for the center of the green. And then what this is what I was doing. And then when I get there, I find the closest hole location to where my ball is lying at the time. Because they're going to always, they always change the hole. Right. Usually there's like maybe three hole locations on a green.
Right.
I just try to find the closest one and then putt at that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, then without there being a hole there, you don't quite know. You kind of know if it's foot, if it would have gone in or not, right. You know. But you know, so it's an approximation, I should say. My golf score on that in those situations is going to be an approximation.
Huh.
So,
well, yeah. I'd just be curious, especially locally, and especially because you know the golf course is closed. Like, you know, I think that competition is fun, and
yeah,
you can start it off with your score, and then
I could just go book a tee time, be like. First tee off at Anger and actually play an actual course that's open.
Yeah.
And if you're speed golfing, you kind of want to get there early because you're running, so you're playing the round right. so much faster than everybody else.
Oh yeah.
You don't want to get in their way and have to play through everybody all the time. Uh-huh. So you want to get there first tee time you can
right.
if you are doing speed golf. In fact, when I was out there at Leicester the other day, another guy was out there. He was just walking and he's like, "Hey, you playing speed golf, huh?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm trying." And he goes. And he's like, "That's pretty cool." I was like, "All right, like brother in arms."
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh. So, for an actual speed golf tournament, is it more similar to golf, where everyone has specific tee times, or is it more similar to a running race, where it's like everyone go and they kind of weed out?
I guess it's kind of like more like golf. It's more of a time trial format. I think it's 4 minutes typically from what I've seen on some of the results from older tournaments. And they have timing mat at the beginning and end. So you literally run to the first tee box and they have like a little, you know, the ones that I've seen on YouTube, if you can YouTube this stuff, they have like little Z flags out there as a start finish line with a timing mat there.
Wow.
And so there's another avenue for you guys, your timing business is speed golf.
Yeah, that's too niche.
Yeah. You've got the one tournament in Minnesota.
Yeah, wow. Very interesting. Well, that's super cool.
My thought was maybe, you know, with Duluth Parks having to close Leicester for financial reasons this year, you know, maybe if they introduce some speed golf, that could be another revenue stream. Who knows?
I mean, plenty of runners in Duluth.
Plenty of runners. I'm sure some of them like to golf as well.
Yeah.
My friend Brian, I know he would kick my butt in speed golf.
Yeah.
Because he's a way better golfer than I am. So he'd be awesome at speed golf.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what I've been into is speed golf.
Nice.
Yep.
And I guess our last segment is shout out. Do you have a shout out for this
session? I do have a quick shout out, and that's in my training group, I had a gal named Missy who she was going to do her first half marathon, was going to be grandma's. Of course, that, you know, we all know that got canceled. So it was really tough for her because she really had some big goals of doing this. Well, she did the virtual half a couple of weeks ago. It wasn't long after our last podcast. And I was out there watching that. And that was just a really super cool thing to see. Her family was out there supporting her. She had friends out there running with her.
Yeah.
They were also in my training group. It was a really cool thing to see. And one thing it dawned on me as I was out there watching is that in a way the virtual races were almost more personal and meaningful than if it was the actual grandma's race. And
right.
It's not the same, and they both had their great, great pieces of value, but to see Missy do that on her own, and every time I saw her, she was just like plugging along. She looked the exact same every time. It was really cool.
Nice.
So big shout out to Missy for completing her first half marathon.
Fun. Cool. My shout out is for Michael Coppy. You know me, I'm always talking about the fastest known times on the Superior Hiking Trail, and back on FKT season, so it's very exciting for me. And Michael Coppy went for an attempt actually almost exactly a year ago, and I don't think he made it very far without supposed stress fracture. I mean, just really bad pain, shin pain, I think. Just got really beat up really quick. And then he, you know, was, he had a really aggressive kind of format and goal of going just kind of no sleep almost and just pushing it really fast. And again, this year, he went out saying, "I'm going under 4 days."
Wow.
Which is really insane. I mean, 4 days exactly is, 75 miles a day, 4 days in a row. And I mean, that is just, think about like Superior 100, you know, how many people are finishing in 36 hours, you know, 38 hours at the cutoff.
Right.
And so, I mean, it's like doing essentially three of those in a row.
Yeah.
You know, with no sleep. So just really crazy. So Mike started on, I think it was Friday, and so he is about 3 days and 12 hours, maybe 3 days and 10 hours in, and he has 200 miles under his belt and just 100 to go. And so he's got a tough road ahead, I think, to get to 4 days, 0 hours, but I think, you know, if he keeps up this pace, which obviously, like, home stretch, you know, you tend to slow down and you tend to want to sleep more, just stop more. But I think he's got a really legitimate shot for going under 5 days, you know, 4 days, 20 hours, somewhere in there. And just for perspective, the male supported times, Cameron Schaefer did a 6 days, 18 hours last year, and that was beaten by Austin Nastrom with a 6 days, 8 hours. Alex Elizabeth did a 6 day 12 hour, and you know, the fastest unsupported is 7 days 13 hours. So, you know, we're looking at 6 days, 8 hours, 6.5 days. And so to talk about, you know, shaving off and to like look at just what's been done, you know, it's kind of a chip, you know, chipping off the time little by little.
Yeah.
You know, 10 hours here, 10 hours there. But to talk about 36 hours faster,
right,
is really insane. And yeah, Mike's doing it. And I guess furthermore, just some kind of neat aspects to this, Michael is 69 years old.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, just to be 70 years old and doing something like this is really wild.
Yeah.
But also he is doing a fundraiser for the Superior Hiking Trail Association, kind of in conjunction with this. And so he's trying to raise money for the association. And what's really neat is that he has pledged to match all donations up to $7,500.
Oh, cool.
And so, I mean, that's just a massive donation to say I'm willing to dig into my pockets and match every single dollar, you know, up to $7,500. And I don't think he's super close, maybe in the $4,000 range, but anyone listening to this should definitely consider donating because it's a double your donation right out of the box pretty much. So. Really cool to see that and just to, you know, kind of do it for the cause and give back to the trail. And he's got great conditions for it. So.
Yeah. That's super cool. He's crushing it.
Yeah. And so if anyone out there wants to, I just guess, know more about this attempt, fastestknowntime.com, and then they have a tracking now link. And so I anticipate Mike will be done probably June 2nd sometime, you know, early June 2nd perhaps. So I think 4 days, 0 hours would be June 2nd at 6 a.m. roughly.
Okay.
So yeah, kind of nuts.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. I was going to stand for a long time.
Yeah. If.
Yeah.
I mean, anything could happen. It's still 100 miles. That's no joke. You know, it's just 2/3 of the way done, but he's definitely on track, so it's pretty exciting. Yeah.
Cool. Anything else, Mike?
That's the only shout out that I had, I guess. So, yeah, nothing really here.
Cool. Well, I think that's about all we have for the podcast. I have one more quick thing that I wanted to mention, and only just because I kind of almost feel like I have to some extent. Well, not have to, but I want to. I just think it's important to mention right now, you know, everybody knows what's kind of been happening down in the Twin Cities and across the country and indeed across the world. And it's some pretty scary and sad times going on right now with the violence and the injustices. And it's really hard. And I really feel bad for so many people. I wanted to kind of just mention this because I feel like it's just something that I want to do. And, you know, I think we all kind of know a person or some people who it seems like just they're just angry a lot. You know, anything that kind of happens and they lead with anger. The first instinct is something with anger. You know, they get something minor, and they kind of maybe even overreact to some extent, or everything just seems to make them mad. And it seems like those people who lead with anger often live there, and they just live in anger all the time. And that's just, oh man, that just destroys a person's soul, and it's just not good for you, and it's not good for those around you. So I really encourage, you know, all of us to really kind of think about, you know, leading with love and compassion and understanding, and living there, living in love and compassion and understanding. It's not only better for yourself, it's better for everybody else around you. And this is going to improve your life. It's going to improve your outlook on life. It's going to improve your situation in life to try to really just be in love, you know, lead with love, live in love. And you're going to get angry at times. It's going to happen. People are going to do wrong things to you. Some things are going to happen. You're going to be angry, and that's okay. But don't stay there. You know, don't stay there. Climb out of that a little bit, and require some work sometimes. That's part of our job as people, is to work hard when the situation calls for it. But always just know that, you know, try to live in love. Anyway, that's what I have to say.
Yeah. Well spoken, Tony.
Cool. Well, let's move on to the next part of the podcast.
Sounds good.